God bless you.
Okay, Mary.
I'll make a motion to go into executive session.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Right? At
6:27.
Okay.
No action was taken during executive session.
Okay. We called the meeting to order, but we went immediately into executive session. We're now going into the public part of the meeting, and I'd like to start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And will everyone please turn off their cell phones?
You did that on purpose, so that was planned.
And we have two sets of minutes. One is for our regular session on March 7th, and the other is a special session that we held on March 18th. Does anyone have any additions or corrections before we call for a vote? Okay, on the minutes of March 7th, 2019.
I'll move it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are approved. And for the special meeting held on March 18th, 2019, any questions or additions or corrections? All in favor, call for a motion.
I'll move it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Motion is approved. And then next up is our update from UCRRA. Welcome, Eric. And Tim, since you're at the far end of the table, I have turned up my hearing aid. Yeah, it would help if you did.
And
it helps the machine too.
I won't be long. There's not a lot to report. We have three new board members, as obviously you're well aware. But I gave them a tour today of the agency. It's, I guess, a tradition for me that as soon as new board members come on, I provide a tour of the MRF and the transfer station and New Paltz and the closed landfills and so forth. So we did that today. Present were Kathy Bynkaffner, Joanne Myers, and Lisa Mitten. Kathy's a returning board member, so it was a good refresher for her, but it was new for Joanne and for Lisa. I know Fred Wagnola, the chairman of the RRA, spoke with those three individuals, and I think he was going to call you about the commission appointments for the solid waste management planning, and we're going to have three board members part of that, and they're going to be Fred, Lisa, and Kathy. And Fred thought they were good because all three of them served on the Solid Waste Commission, so they're already up to speed. So out of the five members, that was probably the most appropriate. So I agree, that's probably a good pick. So we toured the agency, and I think everything went well. I think people are up to speed. And I don't think I have a lot to report at this time. Everything's quiet right now. We will be going out to bid in May for the final disposal, and then probably for the hauling in June. So by the end of June, I should know what the tipping fee is going to be next year. So, yeah.
What about numbers with plastics and recycling? Have you noticed a nosedive in that since you stopped, or at least pulled back a little bit on clamshells and other types of rigid plastic?
Yeah, well, you know, we never took clamshells. We never took those. As long as the agency has been in existence, we've never taken those. I did hear from one of our plastic brokers, though, that he did say if you start throwing clamshells in, they're contamination, and you're going to be charged. And he was pretty adamant about it because he can't get rid of them. Again, this is all market-based. I heard from our paper supplier, not supplier, but our paper broker. It was interesting because he said, we're not going to be taking cereal boxes anymore. I don't know how to get that out because the people he sell it to won't take them because it's all, again, it's market driven. There's no market for it, so they're shutting them down.
But what's the problem with cereal boxes?
It's the fiber that they're composed of that they don't want those boxes. They want straight junk mail. And so they're going to pull them out and get rid of them when they get to the paper mills.
Wow.
So I said, well, it's going to be really hard. I can't do that.
Crazy.
And that's the only paper broker I have right now. No one else will deal with us because the paper markets are we're getting paid zero. Fortunately, they're picking it up. So we're at zero. I'm still getting rid of it. He did back off of that after we said, look, you're going to take it out of your end or do whatever you have to do on your end. I can't start telling the public I can't take cereal boxes. So he backed off of it, said, we'll keep putting them in then, and we'll worry about it on our end. So the markets are really, really tough right now. They're tight, and it's a real problem. So, and I don't see any. Some people say they see a light at the end of the tunnel. I personally don't see it. This is a policy change by China, and if anything, it's going to get worse because China's going to cut off the tap totally in about 2 years, is what I guess. Maybe three, if we're lucky. They'll be totally self-sufficient. They'll have enough recycling in the country. They don't need the rest of the world's recycling. So, but we're dealing with it. The good news is I'm moving it because I do know facilities that are not moving product, and when you don't move product, you're really in trouble. If you don't have people come to pick it up from you and don't want it, then that really puts you in a serious bind because then just that shuts down the whole system. The fortunate thing is I'm still moving it. The glass, I'm paying $40 a ton to get rid of glass. And the reason I'm paying $40 a ton, which is a good number, is it's really clean, good glass because it's coming from the towns. So there's no contamination in it. It's already separated by the towns. So they're coming up from New Jersey. It's paste glass. It's coming up from New Jersey. We're loading up the trucks, and we're paying them $40 a ton to take it. And they can actually take it and recycle it. So with the city of Kingston, I got to figure out what we're going to do with that. I'm working on it. Because...
another bin for us?
No, I'm working on...
Different
what
day.
What I'm going to try to do is...
Different day.
What I'm going to try to do is... You know the old adage, dilution is a solution to pollution, which was the adage back in the 70s. I'm actually going to attempt that with ours. And I'm figuring, because it's not being separated at the city, it's going into our MRF, and there's going to be a ton of contamination. So what happens in the MRF glasses, you get plastic bits in with it, plastic bottle caps, anything that's going to fall down through. I don't have that problem right now because we don't run it through the MRF. But if I run all the city of Kingston glass through the MRF, it's going to have all these contaminants in it. And as an example, and I'll just back up real quick, I was talking to my counterpart in Onondaga County, which they're 3-4 times the size we are. They're huge. They have the city of Syracuse. And I was talking to her, and she was talking to some senators and some assembly people. And she said, you have to realize that MRF glass doesn't get recycled. And her eyes got big, and she goes, I'm telling you the fact. It doesn't get recycled because there's so much contamination in it that you can't get rid of it. It ends up, if you're lucky, it ends up either as a roadbed in the landfill or maybe daily cover. If you can find a landfill or DC that allows it as daily cover, that's the best you're going to get out of it. So what I'm going to try to do with the city of Kingston is run it through the MRF. And if I put it in with the really good glass, because it's so good out of the towns, that the contamination level may not be high enough for it to be an issue, and I could still hopefully send everything to paste. That's what I'm going to try to do, if I can. So.
I have a question. If some of the municipalities got together and picked up a piece of equipment that could process, either shred paper or pelletize plastic or whatever, that's going to impact our contract with the agency. I mean, are you still looking to keep up these tonnages? Are you agreeable to try to process it locally so you're not paying $45 a ton? I mean, have you had any thoughts about, what if businesses came in that could potentially process it?
Well, that could process
it? Yeah, even though we're under contract, yeah.
Well, first of all, you're only on a contract to the end of next year. So I don't know if a business is going to come in to the end of next year. So it might be a moot point. There were 5-year extensions on those, and they're up at the end of 20. So you got a year and a half, 3/4.
before they're up, so I don't see an issue there.
Not speak for the agency, but just as a legislator, that's the ideal, is that some kind of incentivization happens that creates the product in-house, so it doesn't have to, go away. That's what's happening in New Jersey, that one site did where that was covered on 60 Minutes, where he basically lost most of his markets when the green sword came down. And so rather than be a processing facility, he became a pelletization facility and now he sells the product, which would be amazing. Because essentially what you're talking about is almost a creation mm-hmm. of a business. I mean, you're talking about it as a collaboration among municipalities, but creating a product that has a market in whatever form, I think that's what it's going to take at this point.
That's good, because there's a part of the point that those processing plants exist in the United States, and primarily they're all through the South and the Midwest, because they're always located near where the manufacturing base is, because you can't pay the trucking.
Right.
So if you open up one of those, it was just what you were talking about. There was a woman I went to a conference up in Syracuse, and she was talking about this. She goes, the problem is if you set up a recycling processing facility in New York, then what? Okay, so you're gonna make pellets, but you still have to have somebody next door who's gonna manufacture something out of those pellets. You have somebody who's making car dashboards, RVs, refrigerators, all these things. So where these recycling processing plants go, they strategically locate them right next to all the manufacturing facilities, so they don't have to pay for all the trucking.
What's happening in the states that are thinking progressively and can't only happen at a county level, but maybe it could. What's happening in the states that are forward-thinking, I know Pennsylvania is looking at it, Washington State and Oregon have both incentivized the manufacturing that would use the product.
To bring
the businesses in that will use the product, because again, otherwise we're going to be looking at mountains of recyclables that are technically trash, right? Because they're without a market, what happens?
You're right.
They just pile. So that's something we need to be talking about and potentially pushing at the state level, but I think it can't hurt to be talking about it at this level or even at the uber local level, because wherever it begins, it pushes the conversation right up the chain.
And what this woman, she was fascinating to listen to, she was talking about how the South is very self-sufficient, because they generate enough recycling in the South to keep those plants moving mm-hmm. and to keep making those new car dashboards, whatever they're making down there.
Like Trex,
for Trex. Yeah, that's the other thing. And where that is exactly where China's headed right now, and they estimate, at least the discussions I've had with some of my peers as well as some of these conferences, in about 2021, 2022, that'll be probably the tipping point in China where they're going to cut the tap off totally worldwide, because they're going to have enough within the country to support themselves, enough recycling. Which is a good thing. I mean, now if you think about it globally, they're going through an environmental awakening in China, which is a good thing for all of us. It hurts us financially. Hurts me financially. I mean, not me personally, but I mean the agency. But globally, it's a good thing. They're going through this awakening. You know, they're going through an awakening like we did in the 60s and 70s. You know, that's what's happening. So.
And I mean, it's going to give you the opportunity to look at other revenue resources. So maybe it's not going to be in there. It's not going to be the recycling. But you have the composting that's
right.
been coming, and the C&D that you're going to be bringing in too. Hopefully, that'll generate some revenue, even if it's putting food lumber and making mulch out of it and then doing composting, whatever. But it's a real, it's kind of a shell game, kind of moving things around all the time.
And we plan on expanding our compost. Now that we bought the acreage next door.
Yeah. And you have the bagger.
We have the bagger. Yep, and now that we're not doing single stream anymore, we're going to move that bagging operation into that location and start bagging. I should have brought it with me tonight. You could have seen it, but since we bought that acreage, I hand sketched on where I want all my buildings. I have this dream, on a residential drop off, and I want a full time HHW
yep.
and bagging operation with compost and a large compost facility. So I have my dream all sketched out, and hopefully it'll come to fruition. So.
and there are counties that are doing that, so
yeah.
Yes, please.
This is a bit of a non sequitur, but I just recently read, and I think I was just trying to find the article in the New York Times and I couldn't find it, or it might have been the Post, I can't remember. remember, and it's not new, but I wondered if you could respond to kind of our role in this sort of new biotechnology, which is that they have a kind of fungus that eats plastic, and in particular breaks down styrofoam. And I was wondering, like, are those, is that something we can incorporate here in Ulster County?
Let me answer you this way. I know enough about that to make myself dangerous. You know, I know enough about it probably to probably say the wrong thing and get myself into trouble. Because I don't know a lot about it. I honestly don't. I've read a few articles on it, but I don't know the details of that process.
Yeah.
I'm unaware. There's other processes out there where they're taking plastics and converting it into diesel fuel.
Yeah, yeah.
But that I know what you're talking about.
I'll try to find it. I just saw it today, and I remember reading about it last year.
Yeah.
And it was on April Fool's Day, and my immediate reaction was,
wow,
"We're going to be okay." You know, we got this virus that can eat styrofoam. It's all going to be good. You know, and then I thought, well, it's April Fool's Day, but they just had another article about it in the Times, and you know, they were saying they found there are a couple of different varieties of it. One they found in the rainforest that apparently, I don't know, some bacteria or something that eats styrofoam, breaks it down. And then there's this other bacteria that was in a, I'm going to find the article.
You didn't read it on Monday, did you?
Because when I first heard it, I thought, oh, we're going to be just fine.
Until it runs out of styrofoam.
Exactly. But I mean, that would be, that's, you know, really cutting edge technology, and I don't know anything about it beyond what was reported. I just wondered if that's something you guys explore or think about or...
It's something I'd have to research more.
Yeah, sure.
The good news is, I want to give you guys some good news. Good news is now that the city of Kingston has switched over to dual stream, hopefully that's going to open up some more avenues for me, because you know this business is all about the volume, and a lot of times when brokers call me up, they'll cold call me and say, "Oh, you understand you're a MRF, you know, maybe we can do some business." So great, we can put you on a broker list, and what we do is we call the brokers and get prices, and we sell to the highest. But a lot of times when they call me, when they start talking about the volumes that we do, a lot of them, they don't care. They say, "Okay, well, thanks a lot, it's too low. They'll take care," and they hang the phone. And I never hear from them again, because we're such a small player that they don't want to waste their time by sending a tractor trailer up for one load every month or every 2 months or something like that. So, but now that the City of Kingston's online, I'm hoping that our volume will pick back up, you know, I don't know, maybe even double. I don't know. And that might open up some more avenues for me. Where I now have the volume where they might start to be interested, you know, in what we have. So I got my fingers crossed.
Now here we go. Very hungry caterpillar eats plastic bags.
Oh, big contributor.
That wasn't even the most recent. This was April 27th, 2017, but I literally just saw something. I can't remember if I saw it yesterday or today. I'm curious, will we know, I mean, maybe this is a City of Kingston question, but I'm concerned about the City of Kingston transitioning to this new system. We have the new bright colored hard bait top, which is pretty colorful and clear that it's different from the others. But I just, even on my street, I hear a lot of confusion. And I'm concerned that it's going to take a while before people figure it out.
Believe it or not, I don't want to speak for Brian, but we've been monitoring that. And Julie Noble's been over our facility as well as Ed Norman.
Yeah.
And what's great is we're watching the trucks that are coming in, and we know what routes they are. Mm-hmm. And some of the trucks that are coming in are great. I mean, they're absolutely phenomenal. Much better than I had expected. Very little contamination. Some others that have come in from different parts of the city are not so great. But they're able to know, Julie's able to pick out, and Ed Norman is able to pick out what parts of the city now that they have to focus on, more education and more...
it's really my house.
Park and I don't know what sections those are. I don't know. I just know that I was out there when they first started bringing it in, and we knew, this truck is coming from this area. Matter of fact, they mentioned the farm, and I never heard that. I grew up in this area. I never heard what the farm was. That's over by the armory.
Roosevelt Park, that's something they refer to as the farm. DPW has nicknames for every section of the city. There's the hills, portion of Kingston. A lot of people have to be Clifton Avenue, that whole area. So yeah, they refer to them as different.
Ed threw me off when he said that. I said, "Where's what farm are you talking about?"
Yeah,
farm. He said it used to be a farmland, I guess.
Yeah.
But they're able to focus in on what areas of the city that they have to really do more compliance and so forth.
I just want to commend the agency on the newsletter that you send out.
Mm-hmm.
I just got that, and you know, it lists the household hazardous waste and all the composting education and a lot of good stuff going on there.
Yeah, when I hired Angie, that was a home run. She's really doing well.
That's great. I just had a question about enforcement, because it's come up, you know, various legislators have called me saying they keep hearing about, because of the it's a combination of the confusion in terms of recyclables and also the fact that now curbside, it's more expensive for recycling for some, I guess, homes or indoor businesses to actually have the recyclables picked up. So the concern is that if people are throwing regulated recyclables into the trash, either because it's easier or cheaper, are you, the agency, aggressively enforcing to make sure
we follow up at every complaint.
And have we issued fines, or what?
We normally we'll call the haulers into the office.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can't regulate it at a homeowner level.
Yeah.
I could. What we regulate usually is when we get the complaints, is some owner cold calls us up and says, "By the way, they put my recycling in with the garbage," you know,
yeah,
or something like that. A lot of times that's county waste, because county waste has split body trucks. People don't realize that there's
mm-hmm.
a baffle in between.
Yeah.
So we follow up on it when we find out, but not all the time. And we have had haulers come in and sit down with me. We sit down with the way it usually works is Tom, my client's guy. He'll call the hauler up and said, "I got you on video. You're nailed. Straighten it out, or we're gonna call you in." You usually give them a heads up first, and then if they get called again, because usually the same homeowner is watching it,
mm-hmm.
and usually that works. You know, we'll call the homeowner back, or you know, we'll try to get in contact with them. We'll say, "Have they been doing it?" "No, they straightened out." Because as soon as you threaten them with Tom, what Tom does, Tom goes, "If you don't straighten yourselves out, the next phone call, you're going to be sitting with the executive director or attorney, and you better bring your attorney, because then the fines get issued as soon as they get involved."
Have you ever issued
and
fines?
Yeah. Actually, one hauler we issued three times. We got a probably total of 15 grand, 12 grand, 12 or 15 grand, somewhere in that ballpark. So,
are you getting more complaints now, or are you seeing more MSW contaminated with recyclables coming in?
We haven't seen that. We haven't seen that, but what I did hear is exactly what you just heard, is that a lot of the garbage rates went up. Matter of fact, one of my own employees called me the other day. And called me on my cell and said, "By the way, I just got my bill from my hauler, and my bill went up through the roof." I said, "For what?" "They're calling it a recycling charge and all that."
Yeah.
And I said, "No kidding, is that what they're charging now?" I use the Town of Olive transfer station. I don't have a hauler, so I go to the Town of Olive every 2 weeks. But yeah, I guess the haulers are really raising the rates, because the recycling markets are shot. You know, and I think the county waste, at the Port of Albany, they're charging something like, I don't know, $140 a ton or something like that to bring your recycling in. But geez, we only charge $103 for garbage. It only cost me $54, you know, to get rid of it on my end. You know.
Just a quick question, just that hit me when you, Tracy's question. When you do levy a fine, like, so say $12,000 to $15,000, then where does that fine go?
Right into our general fund.
Right into your general fund. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just curious.
Yeah, right into our general fund. So it doesn't really do a lot for the budget.
Yeah.
You know, $15
I was just
million
curious
budget,
if it went. The state had a hand in it.
Yeah. No. It all comes to the RA.
Still would hurt a hauler.
Still hurts a hauler. When you nail them for $5,000, you call them again, you nail them for another $5,000. That's when they wake up. You know. Usually, when you get to the first level, they usually straighten out. But then you got to watch them, because they'll be good for 6 months or a year, and then they'll start to slide back, and that's when you have to call them in again. You know,
that's going
to
get worse.
So
I mean, it's just because the cost of getting rid of recycling is getting higher with these collapsing markets, so it's just easier to throw it in with the waste.
It is.
And it's going to start to become much cheaper to do that.
You know, I was talking to Andrew Radin, who some of you may know. He's with Okra. He's one of the recycling people. But he said that in the past couple of years, Okra's budget for recycling went up 1,700%. Think about that number, 1,700% in like 2 or 3 years.
Is that Onondaga?
Yeah.
That's mind-blowing.
I think one of the big problems is that the proliferation in packaging. We really need to simplify the packaging waste stream. It's like anything they can invent or create for packaging is, you know, and there are places in Europe that have extended producer responsibility, is that what it's called? And you use it, you make it, you use it, you got to take it back. And that way you have a steady stream and you're much more likely to use packaging that absolutely can be recycled. I think that, you know, and of course that's going to have to be done at a federal level or at least a state level. I don't see how we could do that at a county level, but streamlining packaging, and one of the things I love that I'm seeing a lot of now on Facebook is the use of banana leaves as wrappings. What a great idea. Otherwise, they're waste, and, you know, they're available, and, you know, that kind of ingenuity, I think, is what is going to save us. But I think we also have to really simplify the packaging waste stream. Because that's your biggest... I think about, you know, what it was like 20 years ago, and it was... three colors of glass and bottles that had a neck or a shoulder and, you know, different grades of paper and cardboard. And we knew the markets, you know, it was Marcal, it was a local box company, and we just have not kept up in terms of, you know, it's one of the problems of globalization. There's some assets that come with globalization, but when you just ship it to wherever, you know, the either lowest price or lowest cost or highest revenue, all that fossil fuel is being burned, and it's a violation of that principle of local self-reliance. So I like some of the ideas of, you know, finding ways of managing our waste. I think we have real good people. Joanne Myers solved problems that nobody else could when she was with Department of Sanitation in New York City. And I think some good ideas are going to be coming up, and maybe we can model some of them here in the county.
We need to speak to Amazon. People buying everything over the internet is just so much.
Yeah.
The packaging is a huge movement right now in the environmental community, the recycling community, because it changes so quickly. You know, if you look at our MRF, I mean, you didn't have the clam, even 10 years ago when I started, you didn't have the clamshells like you got now. Everything's,
yeah.
And, you know, and I don't know if I told this group or not. I don't know if I told this group or not, but, you know, I was at one of the conferences and an engineer stood up and he said, by the time our firm designs a MRF and builds it, it's outdated. Like that, and it's outdated because the materials have changed.
Yeah,
and the materials keep changing, and so these MRFs are trying to hit these moving targets all the time, and it's impossible.
Yeah. But I think it's also a cultural. It's not exactly a shift, but a thing that's gotten worse over that same course of 20 years. I mean, Mary just said about getting rid of styrofoam. I mean, so there's a lot of clamshells that are being used, not in place of styrofoam, but in a whole new way. Like when I go to the supermarket, I never used to get eggplants in a clamshell or green beans in a clamshell or, you know, all these lettuces in a clamshell. They were either in bulk or in a bag. And now all that stuff, I mean, in a supermarket, you could have a cart filled up with clamshells that didn't used to be styrofoam.
Yeah.
They used to be thin plastic bags or free
float
or just loose. So, I just think as a culture, we've gotten into this kind of convenience packaging in the same way that, you know, now sandwiches are in clamshells that used to just be wrapped in foil and paper.
Yeah. You know, I'd go to the deli and I'd order a roast beef on a hard roll.
They'd wrap it in paper.
Now I went to a supermarket not too long ago. I added a roast beef, you know, on a hard roll, and it came in. The guy made it, and then he cut it in half and put it in a clamshell and closed the lid. I'm like, what are you giving me a clamshell for? Just wrap it in paper.
Yeah, and he didn't used to put it in styrofoam. He used to put it in paper. That's why it's not strictly the styrofoam change. It's more complicated. But you think about all these things that we just throw away in volume that we take for 15 minutes of use.
It's huge. I mean, Rockland doesn't take clamshells. I mean, look at that volume. They've got 2.5 times our population.
But you said that certain MRFs can handle number one. Most clamshells are number one. Right?
If you have the right optical sorters, you can do it. Like when I toured Brooklyn, Sims down in Brooklyn, they have the right optical sorters where they can sort clamshells because they can tell, the optical eye can tell what type of plastic it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the human eye can't do it. You have to pick it up and sort of look at it and crumple it. It's impossible. And when I told him about our MRF, you know, he said, well, he goes, what do you do with clamshells? He goes, we can take them right out of the waste stream. I said, oh, neat. He goes, can you take them out too? I said, no, I don't have any optimal sorters. And his immediate response was, if you don't have optimal sorters, forget it. It's impossible.
Investigate that.
It would take a major retrofit of the MRF. I mean, it could be done. You'd probably just ripping the whole thing down and going from the new. By the time you try to retrofit it,
I think if we're caught up, I'd like to move on to the resolutions.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome. You all have a good night now.
You too.
Nice to meet you. Take care.
Bye bye. I just want to check because I don't want to hold people up. Eric, are you here observing or have some new business?
I'm here observing. I'm here. Dave Haldeman from the county EMC asked me to come because
for
he was
the EMC.
Yes.
And Tracy, we have new business. Do you want to stay through the resolutions? I know you have a little one at home. And
if you don't mind taking it out of order,
folks on the committee are okay with that.
I'm good.
Okay.
Okay, so just the two things are plastic bag legislation passed at state level, which everyone knows, and we're starting to the environmental groups that we worked with to pass it at the county level have been breaking down the legislation to understand where we're preempted and where we're not. It appears that when it goes into effect, it's going to preempt all plastic legislation, so it's going to take the place of any local plastic ban or regulation, which I'll speak to in 1 second, but that in terms of the you've heard that the 5-cent fee is an opt-in on the paper alternatives. So I think here at Ulster, we have a decision to make, and I just want to put it in your brains to start thinking about it, because our legislation will be allowed to stand in terms of the 5-cent fee, it appears, 5-cent fee going to the retailer. If we opt into the legislation as proposed at the state level, that 5-cent fee would be split between the state going toward an environmental protection fund and the county going for purchase of bags and education. I think it would be a mistake to allow our legislation to start and allow the stores to keep the 5 cents and then to take it from them. I think if we're going to want to opt in to the 5-cent fee as going toward our education and the state's Environmental Protection Fund, that we should do it at the outset, which would mean a delay in the start. And so we should probably have that discussion in further detail next month. One concern that was raised in talking to the environmental groups is it appears, and maybe it's not a bad thing, but the state's legislation, it does have a carve out for WIC and SNAP. I thought at first it didn't, but it does have a carve out for WIC and SNAP. And it does exempt restaurants, but all plastic is banned. And the way that they read that, that means that reusable plastic bags are banned. So they cannot be sold at stores. So those woven plastics and the woven polystyrene foam, all of that will no longer be allowed to be sold at stores. No plastic bags whatsoever provided or sold. So I'll give you an update once I have final answers, and we should probably talk about it next month to decide what we want to do.
It is, so these aren't any good either.
No. We'll need to talk about it, but if you can all think about it a little bit, just in terms of that 5 cent component. The other issue is that the executive side of the house, which is in charge of operations, they did do an RFP to get somebody on board to do the rollout, but I have to say, just quite honestly, and I've been attempting to have these conversations with the other side of the sixth floor, I feel like they're behind the power curve in terms of the education component for the July effective date. So it's another thing to take into consideration. But we're still, right now, we go into effect in July. And I can also say that we should be really proud because in the conversations with the state level and even the conversations that were held at the Capitol, they talked about Ulster leading the way, and we've been covered in magazines and even Politico reaching out to me to talk about the local component because we're the only jurisdiction that did the hybrid approach in advance of this legislation. So that's good news, but something to think about. And then the one other thing, which I'll just want to give a quick update, is both Mary called me, Mary and I haven't been able to connect back, but Mary and Joe called me about an issue in Saugerties. It was eye-opening, related to a C&D processing facility, with air quotes, and problems. There was a town meeting where 230 people attended. So
it was the Zoning Board of Appeals that they were.
Yeah, so it appears that I don't have all this down, but it appears that a processing facility was registered, not permitted. These are two different things at the DEC level. What was really eye-opening to me, and I talked to the head of Region 3 today, and we're going to have a phone conversation so that I said, just on behalf of our members and the legislature, and just so that we could really have an understanding of what's happening at DEC and what the intersection is. DEC is involved in an investigation on the other two sites, and she couldn't speak to any of that, but when I even looked at the regs, as she said she'd call me back to get. It appears that you can just register a C&D processing facility, it's not required to be permitted if it doesn't accept certain things. Mm-hmm. But what's troubling is that if you register that facility, and these are the questions I'll be asking, what does DEC do to ensure that things that aren't allowed to be received at a facility that's just registered and not permitted, what do they do to ensure that that's not happening? Because
they got kicked off the property when they went to inspect.
Yeah, and the list of what you can accept when it's registered, not permitted, was surprising to me. It wasn't just clean brush and trees and dirt and cement and brick. It was roofing. It was electrical wires, you know, it was so. Mm-hmm. So I all of a sudden thought, wow, you mean I could just, if I had a piece of property, file for a registration and then say, come on in from anywhere and everywhere and just dump, create a mountain here. You know what I mean? That's what we really need to get to the bottom of. Now, the last thought is we don't have flow control of C&D because we didn't include it in the language when we passed it. I have Chris looking at it.
There's a law from 1976 in the county about not bringing things in from outside.
That's waste. It's considered waste. Yeah.
If you're going to landfill.
Yeah, it's considered waste. So that's the point, is that those are two different things. So we have a no waste importation law, but waste is municipal solid waste. Construction and C&D material is considered something different. I believe that we can have a discussion about whether or not we want to include flow control of C&D material. It was deemed at the time that we were talking about flow control that the legislation wouldn't pass with C&D in it. But this situation highlights a problem because right now, if the answer is that DEC is saying a registration is enough to allow for outside C&D material to come in and be piled up, that's a problem. Like, and if it were included in flow control, yes, the agency would have to answer questions in terms of capacity and maybe make changes in terms of capacity and disposition in terms of processing, but it wouldn't. We could prohibit outside C&D from coming in, and we could have a tight regulation on it ourselves. So it's worth having the discussion, and I just want to put it in your brains, and I want you to know that I'm on it, and I'm trying to get.
And also, I talked to Mark Longo, and he had talked to Carol Smith about it. He said as far as the county goes, it's more of a health issue.
Mm-hmm.
So, and one of the residents stated at that event, and I used to actually watch his kids, that at his mother's property, they piled it up so much that it spilled over his mother's property. The stone wall is gone, and it's almost 25 feet onto his mother's property. So they're looking into seeing, and they said they would allow them to test what is on her property.
Where's the location?
It's very close to you, Goat Hill Road,
so
John
do
Joy.
Do they go all the way back? Like, I'm trying to think.
He's been using two alternate sites as well.
Did they just build
so there's three altogether.
Did they just open a new site, or is that a different?
Well, I don't know that it's totally.
What do they call themselves?
Carolus.
It's Joey Carolus, but I don't know what he calls his business. But it's across from, you know where Ross Lumber is?
Mm-hmm.
It's across the street there.
Behind the steel?
So it's on the right-hand side going towards Woodstock.
Okay.
And then there's a road off of John Joy Road. And that's a funny name. I never heard of that road before. And then off of Goat Hill Road.
But he's only registered for one of those three sites. The other two, there's no registration on file.
Wow.
You can look it up yourself.
I mean, you can have, we are a registered site. Anybody who takes in any type of solid waste, which includes C&D.
I don't see anyone on the website.
Well, we are a registered facility. In fact, we just had an inspection, and they want us to register now for our brush because we have so much. So the regulations are specific to what is C&D as a registered C&D facility. You can import it, but you cannot landfill it.
Right.
And then you can only keep it on site for a specific amount of time. That's why they wanted us to register it, because we were stockpiling it. And at least with this material, it's 2 years. So I think part of the problem out in the Saugerties area is that they're landfilling it. And they have really strict rules now. The new Part 360 that went in January, you have to have manifests, and so these haulers, these truckers, should be coming in with manifests that are available for DEC review. Can't kick the DEC out.
Yeah,
I don't know how
they kicked them off the property, and
I tried to.
And they also,
I don't know who they were, and they weren't leaving. They
and also,
and they don't. You don't.
The neighbors have been keeping track of how many trucks are coming through, and the amount that he is, the amount that he's reported for the past 3 years.
He's falsified.
Is wrong, and they also, he's saying he filed them in a timely fashion. The town, looking at the records, said they all were filed at the same time after they were asked for. So, I don't know. It's really a mess.
Yeah.
One of the neighbors sent a drone over the property and has pictures, and it's really...
Talk to him, he's interesting.
Mind-blowing.
Which is
the guy that took the drone pictures?
Yeah.
I used to watch his kids. His kids were my first two daycare kids.
Aww.
Mm-hmm. What strikes me is, you know, I know if this happened in the city of Kingston, people would be all over Common Council and
There were over 200 people at that meeting.
Yeah.
But and that meeting, you know, unfortunately, that meeting really was only addressing one really small piece.
Yeah.
And some of the things people were talking about were really important.
Yeah.
But really didn't have anything to do with what that particular little piece of decision was.
I just put in Goat Hill Road.
Yeah, and I'm gonna follow up. For example, when I went and I just pulled it up again. When I went on, and I'm gonna ask these questions of the DEC. When I went on the DEC site, and when you go to. Yeah, when you go to the registration for registered C&D processing facilities, mm-hmm. they have a model waste control plan. I'm just going to read from it for a second. it says the following model waste control plan provides examples that a facility may choose to incorporate. So all the language in terms of registered facilities versus permitted
is
very, very broad. I read it as optional. You know, it's like you can only accept this material, but in terms of the processing, it sounds like optional language. So I'm going to see if I can get some criteria.
The difference is the amount of tonnage is brought in on an annual basis.
I'm getting my call from
and
getting paid.
I don't know what the threshold was. I wish Tim was here. I think it's 25,000 tons.
But I think
there's several organic farms right bordering it.
This is a red flag that's gone up, is all I'm saying.
I totally forgot. I remembered in the beginning, and then I forgot that Brian has to leave, and we have some resolutions.
Yeah, if we can.
So any other new business, I'm going to defer until after resolutions. I wish you had reminded me sooner.
I'm just getting the text from them now. They're just getting ready
thank
to
you.
Come in. So.
Thank you, Tracy. Okay, so let's get to the resolutions. And I want to make one comment while you're still here and request also that Fawn ask that the legislative staff. This is a very small thing, but I am thrilled to see that on a regular basis we're getting requests for pilots for solar systems. That's a really good sign. But I can't figure out what the revenue on the pilots is because it's in dollars per kilowatt rather than if they can multiply. I don't know the size of these systems, so I don't know what the actual revenue is, and if somebody could just provide that moving forward, so that
we should get it for this one too. I mean, it does kind of raise again those concerns.
It shouldn't hold anything up, but it's just to translate it into with the pilots, what actual revenue they're paying. And it's interesting that each one is different. It's not standard. Each pilot is being negotiated independently. So let's start. I'd like to hear, entertain a motion to bring resolution number 128 forward, adopting proposed local law number 20 of 2018 as amended. A local law requiring restaurants and fast food establishments to provide plastic beverage straws solely upon request.
I'll make a motion.
Okay. Moved by Legislator Waltman. Seconded by Legislator Eckert. Any discussion?
I still feel the same. Everybody knows how I feel about it. So.
Can you just?
Oh, I'm sorry. You might not.
Yes.
Sorry. I feel that there's a way to promote this without dictating it to the businesses. I feel like we can form a partnership and hit more points on a voluntary basis with education instead of, especially after the plastic bag thing, not forcing something. Because I think when you're a partner, you get further than when you're told what you have to do.
Yeah, I think it was Brian who raised this issue about, having empathy for the fast food workers who, you pull up to McDonald's and you get your stuff and you pull away and you're like, they didn't include a straw. And, you can certainly see that happen. I have empathy for that position. And I've had at Marist where I work, I indulge myself in a smoothie every once in a while. I got one today, and they have, it's terrible. And they have paper straws.
Okay.
And they're good for like the first two sips. I'm willing to take my hit for the environment. I don't mean to suggest otherwise, but it, it
would be nice if there was some sort of transition where we could, because, you know, McDonald's has probably spent a long time scientifically studying the exact size of the straw. You know, it's like a really nice straw. You get it, you get through the drive-thru, and then you're furious. You know, your kids are screaming, they want whatever. So I wish there were a better way to transition. Having said that, I also feel like, you know, these are first world problems because there are terrible things going on. And so I'm both empathetic and at the same time, and I'm going to go to Terry's Deli around the corner, and they're, you know, I'm going to go in there and they're going to yell at me for the plastic bag ban. I'm going to hear it about the straws. So I know what the consequences are going to be. On the other hand, I'm really just so deeply, profoundly troubled by the pollution from this stuff. So I'm not sure how we handle it. I'm going to follow them. I'm willing to take your vote.
But without question, that's very concerning. But, you know, what in thinking about this now, we've discussed this for a while, and really I've kind of settled on the position that I think we need to look for a more comprehensive single-use plastic statement, or if because at the end of the day, this is a statement. It's not a ban. We're requiring that the consumer ask for this item. But I think we're missing out on a bigger discussion. I think we should be talking about single-use plastics comprehensively, because we're not talking about necessarily the plastic lid that's going on the cup. We're only talking about the straw that penetrates the plastic lid. We're not talking about the stoppers that you get at Starbucks. And I've been really mindful lately of in my daily routine, the single-use plastics that I'm using, right? And I see that I use, and I try to avoid them where I can. But I think it goes back to a point Manna made earlier. This stuff is ubiquitous. It's in places that, unless we think about it, it's in the toothpaste cap, and it's so. I'm not questioning any. I'm going to be a no on this only because it's not comprehensive. I think if we could have a comprehensive statement on single use plastics. And again, this is something I guess I would think a memorializing resolution that spoke to that, and forward that to our representatives in Albany, I think would be very useful. But on this, no, because it's only an isolated one item. It's the item that penetrates the plastic lid and very often the plastic cup. And, you know, so because it's only one item, I would prefer a comprehensive. So that's why I'll be a no tonight.
I'm going to be a yes. I definitely hear what Brian's saying. I just had an experience with a bar in Woodstock where they've gone to paper thin little cocktail straws, because they're really like a cocktail establishment. And I asked, you know, is price-wise and stuff. I was talking to the owner. And so they're essentially doing what this says, is they're not. When they make the drink, like when they mix the drinks, they have the metal stirrers, but when they hand them out, they just don't put there's no straw in it. She said most people don't ask for one. Mm-hmm. She, you know, she's like, we're going through way less than what I anticipated, so it's not like really, I haven't seen like any of that. So I look at it at one, I think this is a good statement. It's not, certainly not a comprehensive means of addressing single-use plastics by any means, and I don't pretend it to be, but at the same time, I think it's an important statement on, you know, a very doable thing, far more doable than, you know, the undertaking of single-use plastic bags, while at the same time, you know, we're not imposing any type of additional costs on a business in this county, so that's why I'm comfortable with it. And I think it continues the, you know, it builds that conversation towards the great, you know, ideal of really more comprehensive removal of single-use plastic. But at least I think actually this is a building step, in a sense, towards that, rather than just throwing it out of business.
that's actually, that was exactly the end part, is exactly what I was going to say, is that I see it as a component toward education and a component toward building to something more comprehensive. And also, I think a lot of businesses will see the result that the business you saw will. I mean, it's one thing when we're talking about to-go cups that have plastic with a plastic top and a plastic straw, but somehow in the last, I feel like it's the last 5 years, I have more often than not people put a straw in my water cup at a restaurant. It's water, you know, so, and that's it's a reusable cup that's going to be washed, or glass. So this is going to, I think, have a huge impact on that, and just remove those from the system. And to the, I remember being really struck by Brian's observation when he brought it up in terms of the McDonald's or any of the drive-thrus. But as I said, I think in one meeting, I think the way that I would handle that proactively if I were a business is I would, in the case of a drive-thru, I would ask the customer if they wanted it. And I'm sure you wouldn't be violated even though you asked, because the customer saying yes is like asking for one, just because it's a to-go cup. And I still think you'd lose, you know, we're gonna see a dramatic reduction in the use of plastic straws.
It's gonna make people think.
Yeah. It's gonna make people think.
Exactly. I know that I don't really have a voice on this committee, but the town of Marbletown, where I serve on the town board, I also serve on their ECC. The town of Marbletown has had this in effect for about a year, and running a lot longer. And so far, it has really gone fairly well. There's been very few complaints, and we viewed it as a step, and as an easy step to take. And also along those same lines, I just was in Miami Beach last week, and the city of Miami Beach has banned plastic straws, and every restaurant you go into has the paper straws that you're referring to. Which, and I actually commended people at the restaurants for doing that. So that was just my 2 cents.
Yeah. And also, I mean, because especially with the issue of with plastic straws too, and I was reading it in an article about the psychology and everything of, you know, different types of things. It was around the state ban on plastic bags, but it talked about straws. And because with straws, it's some crazy high percentage, I don't want to give a fake number out, but it was high, of people that use straws when they're at, people don't use straw when you're drinking a glass of water or your orange juice in the morning or in your daily home life. You're not, people aren't going to the cupboard, the vast majority, and pulling out a straw. So that's why another thing, it's really something that's pushed upon them. I mean, people aren't, you know.
Yeah.
So that was just another interesting take on it.
I think it's because the restaurants seemed to think over in the past that it was more sanitary, and at home you're not worried so much about sanitary. I also want to say that I've been really impressed with how many restaurants in Marbletown, it's really clear, but other places, Kingston, Town of Ulster, that are not automatically giving out the straws already, except if it's a carbonated beverage. They say that people don't like the fizz, and yet at home people drink soda out of a glass. So I think if there's no further discussion, I'd like to call for the vote. Are we ready to do that?
Yep.
Okay. On resolution number 128, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay. I guess 4 in favor, 2 opposed, the motion passes. And we'll see what happens on the floor. And resolution number 165, supporting a notice of intent of Ulster County to serve as the lead agency for the removal of the Mount Pleasant Bridge in the town of Shandaken, Department of Public Works.
I'll move it.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes.
And Tracy left.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
And here are our two solar resolutions. Resolution number 166, authorizing the chair of the county legislature to execute a payment in lieu of taxes agreement with New Beginning Solar for a solar energy system pursuant to real property tax law section 4.
Move. We don't have to draw one. I'm sorry.
Second.
Oh,
I'll second.
Okay. Sorry, who moved it?
I did.
Okay. Sorry.
Did we
pass the straw down?
A little
better. What's that one?
Is this it?
No, that's the
one
pleasant.
We just voted on.
Okay.
But the straw one.
Oh, we didn't actually vote on it.
No, we did vote on it. We just didn't pass it around.
We didn't pass it. Okay.
That
would have
been good.
Now, what is this one? This one is the straw.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to do. Okay. All right.
Make sure you check. Yeah, the two views.
All right.
Exactly.
Resolution number 166. I just read that. Do I hear a...
I'll move it.
Second. Okay.
And that's in the town of Marlton. I just wanted to add.
We're still on 166. That was already moved by
that was
Jonathan
moved in second.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
Okay. This is the example that I would like to give of why. And first of all, I want to say that this is essentially a reverse pilot. I think that Brian, you coined that term. I think in the sense that these solar companies are exempt from having to pay taxes on the increased property value for installing the solar system. But then they negotiate a pilot because they are using county services, and so they're willing to pay some taxes almost on a voluntary basis. That's why we were calling it a reverse pilot. And I am thrilled that we're getting these, because that means that large solar systems are being installed around the county. But I was confused about what
the financial impact,
the revenue, and notice that this particular one is $3,500 per megawatt. So they calculate how many megawatts in a year, and then they pay the county that on a voluntary or a negotiated agreement. So we have a motion on the floor. Any further discussion on resolution number 166? I will call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Motion passes unanimously. And Mary, I'm passing it your way, so I'm not going to forget.
Thank you.
Okay. Resolution number 167, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a payment in lieu of taxes agreement with Risander Solar for solar energy systems pursuant to the real property tax law. Do I hear a motion?
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion? And again, note, this one is half of the megawatt. This one is, or less than half, 1,167 per megawatt. And I just, you know, I couldn't do the math, and I was kind of curious what the revenue was. So just if AFIA, what's...
Our financial?
Yeah.
Amber.
Amber. If Amber would be so kind as just to give us a little memo on that, just
okay.
So that would be great. And I just couldn't even find the number of megawatts to be able to do the math, so... It might be in here, but any further discussion on resolution number 167? I will call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion carries. All right, and last but not least, resolution number 168, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to enter into an agreement with New York Environmental Protection and Spill Compensation Fund for the distribution of proceeds from tax foreclosure sale of a parcel of county-owned property at 454 Hurley Avenue in the town of Ulster, map number 48.17-1-41.100, Department of Finance. And this is a site that has been or will be cleaned up and then offered for sale. And half the revenue will go into that cleanup fund, and half the revenue will come to the county. Motion?
Move.
Seconded.
Any further discussion? Again, this is another really good sign. We're actually cleaning up the environment. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. And I have a couple quick old and new business, kind of still in new business, but I think we can probably soon move it to old business. I just want to report.
I'm going to just take my leave, man.
Yes.
Thank you.
Did you want to sign this card?
Oh, yeah.
And we still have a quorum, and we have no further votes to take, so.
Okay.
And that is just a quick update on the food waste composting. We actually have a preliminary draft. Laura did a lot of work on it. And I want to thank Victoria Fabella for doing an amazing job for a foundational piece. We've had input from the multi-stakeholder. Good night.
Good night. Thank you very much.
You know, really good input from a multi-stakeholder working group, and on May 19th, from I think 1 to 2 here in Chambers, we're going to invite the haulers, the large food waste generators, to give input on the draft legislation so that by the time it comes to committee in May, it will have been vetted with all of those stakeholders. I'm even going to see if we can make some phone calls. Maybe the committee will each take a few calls to make, to just really encourage people, if they can't come to the meeting, to send their comments in ahead of time, so that once this comes to committee or gets out to the floor for a public hearing. And I also want to say that we have to be in touch with the various attorneys, because I believe that food waste composting was also in the state budget, that it has already. Laura, what are we getting from Gary on this? Did it already pass, or is it just still alive at the state level?
I'm confused actually with that. It's almost like he thought it got passed, but I think budget got passed. I don't believe any of the laws did.
Okay. All right. So, but theirs doesn't go into effect until 2020. Ours would go into effect, 2022. Ours would go into effect in 2020. But again, we have to look at preemption and so forth. But the amount of support has been really encouraging. And very little, I mean, really no objection, just how are we going to do it? Like the schools are trying to figure out how to make that work and what it's going to cost and so forth. But there's been a lot of support. And I think it's because the businesses that are already doing it are having such a successful experience that we already have those sort of early adopter models. And then in terms of the Climate Smart Committee, I think we already reported on refrigerant management. The next goal of the Climate Smart Committee is to have a presentation on storage. So renewables are great, but unless we have ways of storing the energy, that the excess energy that they generate for times that are, you know, for peak demand, you know, so I hear a lot, well, storage isn't ready. Renewables are ready, but storage isn't ready. But in talking to the experts in the field, that is not the case. So we're going to bring some of them together to educate all of us, you know, the lawmakers, but also, you know, a lot of the industry people who might really benefit from that. And we have made some progress on the Green Business Challenge. We are going to be able to start posting successful green businesses. And as a result, we're going to move forward with a training in Saugerties, whose Chamber of Commerce, CAC, Climate Smart Committee, you know, are all raring to go. So we're going to do a training. We haven't scheduled it yet, but now that we have, you know, a green light. Now, in terms of hiring someone, Tracy and I had one conversation. We need to have a follow-up conversation. Some of the concern of the executive branch was resources, particularly at Department of Environment, if they were going to have to carry the ball single-handedly on the plastic bag recycling, that was going to take a lot of their attention. They still have to do the education, but the fact that this passed statewide, I think, takes some of the pressure off them because everybody's going to have to do it and so forth. So we need to have, they asked that to wait to see what happened with the state budget, and we will go back and revisit and see if we can get an RFP to start essentially a pilot position that they're talking about making a full-time position with benefits in the future. So, and I think it's very needed. One person to actively, proactively work with our businesses to implement, help them implement climate solutions. So that's it on my report. Any questions? All right. Are folks thinking about that they might want to adjourn this meeting?
Motion to adjourn.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. All in favor? Meeting adjourned at
7:40.
7:40.